Well, welcome back. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Clay Masters. I'm sitting in today for Ben Kiefer. Religious voters have become increasingly divided this election season, with a survey from this Tuesday by the Public Religion Research Institute showing white Catholics favoring Clinton over Trump 46-42%. Conversely, evangelicals have largely stayed steady in their support of the Republican nominee. In that same survey, there was no significant change in white evangelical Protestant support for Trump, with 65% of them still in his camp. That said, they've given less support to the GOP candidate than in previous elections, and Pew Research data from September shows the main reason evangelicals support Trump is, quote, because he is not Hillary Clinton. So this hour, we're going beyond the statistics to talk with two Iowans, an evangelical and a Catholic voter, about what's influencing them this election. We also want to hear from you. Has your faith impacted your decision on who to vote for in this presidential race? Give us a shout, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's get to our guests. Mark Schmidt is Director of Respect Life and Social Justice for the Archdiocese of Dubuque. Mark, welcome to River to River.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Tammy Kobza is State Director of the Iowa Eagle Forum and a resident of Northwest Iowa. Tammy, thanks also to you.
Thank you for having me, too.
And Kedron Bardwell is Professor and Department Chair of Political Science at Simpson College. He's also here to lend his expertise, no stranger to River. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
So let's first just go through both of you and just kind of explain where you're at currently with this election process. Mark Schmidt, set us up. How are you thinking you're going to vote in this election?
Well, as a Catholic, the challenge of voting is never easy, regardless of the election. I think this one is a little more prominent because both main party candidates have been in the public spotlight for decades. And so a lot of the stuff that we as kind of electorate have had an opportunity to form opinions about them already. But the challenge is that as a Catholic, you know, when we look at voting, the goal is to do good and avoid evil, or in other terms, to help promote the intrinsic dignity of the human person and serve the common good. The challenge in this election, as is in previous elections, is that neither candidate really fully promotes the dignity of the human person from conception to natural death, and both have some challenges to serving the common good, as we've seen recently in the news, the WikiLeaks with Secretary Clinton's aides with some of the anti-Catholicism, but Donald Trump has also had some anti-Catholic supporters and spokespeople who have said some things publicly, and so that's a direct attack on the common good because of the dignity of the freedom of religion. There's also been some issues with regards to the way that we treat the refugee and the immigrant, the way that we treat the unborn, and so it's really challenging because neither candidate really lives up to the standard of promoting the intrinsic dignity of the human good and serving the common good. And so it's a big challenge. I personally, I know who I'm not voting for, but I don't yet know who I will cast my ballot for.
Okay. Not completely sold yet. You've still got a few more weeks, I suppose.
Sure.
And Tammy, how are you coming at this election? How have you, as you've been watching it since it started here in Iowa way back in early January of last year, and now we're here with the two major candidates, how have you followed this election and made up your mind?
Well, thank you. I have made up my mind, and I have been following it because, you know, politics in Iowa is 24/7, 365 days a year, and I've already voted for Donald Trump. And I'm not speaking for all evangelicals, obviously. I'm just basically speaking for myself. But I think that Donald Trump is serving the common good in that he's serving Americans. He is serving our country. And that is the call of the executive, to protect our borders, to protect the American people. Because in doing so, he protects other countries. Our country has been so great because we have religious liberty, which Donald Trump went to the mat for at the convention. That's why, I don't know if you have a copy of the RNC's platform, but Donald Trump actually went to bat and insisted that we get rid of this Johnson Amendment, which restricts our religious liberties. And one thing as an evangelical that I so appreciate about our country's heritage is that the religious liberty that our founders fought for and defended and made sure we had is going to continue under a Trump presidency. And that religious liberty then protects our property rights. It defines that he knows we need a common border, that we need a secure border. I understand that there's concern about refugees and immigrants, but I think what's resonating with Donald Trump, he's protecting Americans, and he's voicing what many of us have been disgusted with the last 10 or more years, this influx of all these illegals who are taking our jobs, who are harming our people. Not all of them, but many of them are. Just look at the Remembrance Project, and you can see the many lives that have been lost due to illegals. And I think that's resonating with the American people. It's not only resonating with evangelicals, it's resonating with people who have never voted before, who have not really paid much attention, and they know something is horribly amiss in our country.
Okay, and Tammy, I'm curious, just two quick questions here. One, was Donald Trump who you were supporting from the beginning? Is that who you caucused for?
Yes, I did actually caucus for him. I have the blessing of knowing some of the Iowa staff people who worked for Donald Trump. And so I was able to get a more of a behind-the-scenes look even at this gentleman. And he's the real deal. He's brash and he puts his foot in his mouth once in a while, but don't we all? And I guess just knowing what they were seeing, the honor it was to work for him, that he's going to defend life, that he's going to defend American exceptionalism is really, because I've never watched The Apprentice. I guess that's his show. But if you go back and, you know, they said, go back and read some of his books. Go back and look at his YouTubes from 20 years ago. He's been saying the same thing about crony capitalism, that we shouldn't be paying for all the expense of these military protection that we give other countries. They should be paying us, at least some.
Okay, Tammy, thank you. I want to go now just to Kedron real quick for some background here. We've heard from two different voters from different factions of the Christian faith usually break down, and it does look different this year, as we've heard from both Mark and Tammy. Kedron, how do you come at how both of these folks are responding to this?
Well, I think the Catholic vote is breaking down in ways that we've seen fairly familiar in previous years. Because of the positions that it takes on this issue of life, and they call it the seamless garment of life, it's found that some of those positions are supported by the Democratic Party and others are supported by the Republican Party. So it'll be interesting to see where the Catholic vote lands. It has been the traditional and most typical swing vote in recent elections. The evangelical vote is something that I study, and I've been really interested in following and surprised by this cycle. Mainly for the fact that Trump is so unconventional in many ways, and also I think in some ways just as antithetical to some of the values that evangelicals have said they supported. This is someone who just a few years ago said he was, quote, very pro-choice. This is someone who right here in Iowa said that he's never asked for forgiveness because he didn't think he ever did anything that he needed to go to God to ask for forgiveness for. So that's been real surprising. I think what's happened here in the last few days is there's been a bit of a domino effect blowing back the other way after the revelation of the tapes. You've seen some evangelical elites, some of the leaders of the evangelical movement, anyone from a strong editorial against Trump in Christianity Today recently to the even more conservative and fundamentalist World magazine to Bob Vanderplaats here in Iowa saying that Trump should essentially resign and let someone else run. You've seen more of a blowback, I think, with these recent tapes about the comments on sexual assault than we had seen previously based on issues like abortion and others.
So has it changed that much? I mean, or is it just that the candidates have changed so much?
Well, one of the things to watch is the elites and the leadership, just as they're different from the lay people in, say, the Republican Party, the elites and the leadership in the church are behaving in different ways than the people in the pews. And that's going to be really fascinating to look at some of the exit polling and maybe some other surveys we could do after the election, because for the most part, except for people like Falwell Jr. and this pastor Robert Jeffress from the Baptist Church in Dallas, many of the intellectual leaders of the evangelical movement, including Russell Moore from the Ethics and Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, have been actually pushing the other way. They were part of the Never Trump camp fairly early. And so what this is showing us is there's a disconnect between the people in the pews and some of the self-appointed or intellectual leaders in the conservative, social conservative movement.
We're going to go to a couple callers now. First start with David in Davenport. David, you're on River to River. What are your thoughts here?
Hi there. Well, I was listening to the evangelical woman speak, and she said that Trump supports religious liberty, which I don't know how she would reconcile that when he says all Muslims can't come in. That's not religious liberty.
Okay, so you're referring to the Muslim ban that was brought up early on in his campaign. Are you a practice? Do you consider yourself a practicing Christian, David?
Christian, yes. Lutheran from Iowa.
Okay, and so do you have your mind made up in this election? Have you voted? Have you always voted along party lines?
No, not necessarily. I've typically voted fairly independently, lean Democratic. You know, I probably am a lot like a lot of people this year where it's hold your nose and vote. The down ballot candidates are something that we all need to take a look at, too, to see if they truly represent our ideals. But, this notion of religious liberty, when the man comes out and flat states something opposite of that, I don't understand how someone could say that that's one thing and it actually is something else.
So, Kedrin, I guess this kind of speaks to the tricky part. First of all, thanks, David, for your call. But, Kedrin, this kind of speaks to the tricky part of the way that Donald Trump has been speaking a lot during this election cycle. He talks about a complete Muslim ban. He pulls off that a little bit. We're seeing him kind of just change a little bit in how he's wording things regularly, which I imagine makes things hard to track for you and you doing your research.
Yeah, it does. I think when there's a kind of a code language that exists, maybe with progressives as well, but I know it exists with evangelicals. When we say religious liberty, the audience is typically going to think issues like, you know, should businesses that sell a certain product have to sell it no matter what, even if they have a conscience objection to doing so? Should they have to sell that good to say a gay couple? They'll think about the Johnson Amendment, which was just mentioned by our other participant. They'll think about, are pastors unleashed or are they somewhat leashed in terms of what they can say from the pulpit? And so I think that's what when religious conservatives hear religious liberty, that's what they're hearing. Now, it may look different from the pulpit, as I said, than it does from the pews. I did a survey a few years ago that showed that there are actually relatively few, only about 20% even of evangelical pastors who want to be able to specifically endorse candidates from the pulpit. And probably the reason for this is they can actually do that up to that now, not including that. They can't say, I endorse Clinton, I endorse Trump, but they can actually support any issue they want. They can support amendments and referenda. They can speak in their own capacity, not as a representative of the church, all they want, using their own free speech. They can even actually use the church for up to 15% lobbying activity on specific issues. So I think this Johnson Amendment Trump has used rhetorically as something to show that he is for religious liberty in a larger sense, but most pastors actually don't feel that that's a restraint on their free speech.
I want to throw this to Tammy and Mark as well. Tammy, there you heard David calling in saying that calling for a ban on Muslims coming to the country is not in a Christian way. How do you come at that answer?
I would say that the Muslim religion, Islam, is not protected under what the founders would call religious liberty. That is Sharia law. That it is not the same God. It's the God of the Holy Bible that the founders were protecting. So I think it's totally consistent where Donald Trump is saying we need to vet these Muslims. And he's really referring to vetting them. Are you going to live here in a safe way? Even George Washington told a Jewish group soon after the country was formed, we love having you here. We just, you know, want to all live in peace and, you know, witness Germany. That there, the Muslims, some of them are a very real threat. And that's what he's talking about. And he is talking about specifically with the Johnson Amendment, letting pastors say what they want. So we don't have a repeat of what happened down in Texas where the mayor said, I'm going to subpoena your sermons. There is an encroachment anymore on our religious liberty. It's
all right.
Not about,
can I jump in on there, Clay?
Yeah, definitely, Kedron. Yeah, what are your thoughts there?
Sorry, I just felt Thomas Jefferson and James Madison kind of rolling over in their graves just then. And let me explain what that means. I don't mean to be snarky here. Jefferson explicitly in his Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom said that religious liberty applies to people of all faith. And in his later writings, talked about Jews, talked about Gentiles and Christians and the Mohammedans, which was basically their word for Muslim at that time. James Madison, when he Memorial and Remonstrance was the name of his speech that was basically protecting religious liberty in Virginia, there was a bill there to tax everyone to pay for Christian education. He explicitly said that religious freedom essentially doesn't mean anything if the government's going to tell you which groups can have it and which groups don't. So maybe there's a divide here, and I think Republicans are going to have to work this out in terms of what religious liberty actually means in America.
And I want to give Mark a chance to weigh in here too. Christianity based in loving your neighbor. You heard David's concerns about the Muslim ban, so-called, that has been discussed a lot during this campaign. How do you come at that, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, as a Catholic, Catholics have always kind of felt politically orphaned throughout the United States history, all the way back to the Revolution when the Quebec Act was included in the Intolerable Acts, and you have the First Continental Congress debating that if Romish and Papists are allowed to come into the Ohio River Valley, the blood of Protestants will run in the streets. Catholics have had canon law thrown at them, similar to the way that Muslims are having Sharia law thrown at them in the propaganda against them. And as a Catholic, we are very in tune to the challenges of being a religious group that has faced persecution within this country. John F. Kennedy, I actually have a coin that was run by a group during John F. Kennedy's presidency that on one side it says, in the Pope we hope, and on the other side it's got Kennedy's face and good for one confession. And so even to this day, as we've seen in the news about the anti-Catholic rhetoric from aides in both campaigns, and so the Catholic teaching also believes that it's about the matter of a person's conscience when it comes to voting. And so when we look at developing our own conscience, we have to understand that my voting and my engagement in political parties or my engagement in the political process, I have to make sure that I'm engaging for the right reasons, that I'm engaging and making my decisions based off faith, hope, love, based off of not only the thou shall not commandments, you know, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not, you know, do this or that, but also the obligation to serve one another, as Matthew 25, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, visit the imprisoned and sick. And we see the challenge of where we have a lot of our fellow people of faith who we get very, very specific on one issue or even two or three issues, and we start to lose the fullness of the gospel in helping us understand why am I voting. And so when it comes to the discussion and the rhetoric that's comes from some folks about, especially about our Muslim brothers and sisters, so as a Catholic, our church says we do pray to the same God. We have a different understanding of who God is, but we pray to the same God. We look lovingly upon our Muslim brothers and sisters, and from just an American experience, we should actually empathize with our Muslim brothers and sisters who are struggling with the bigotry that they receive. you know, their mosques are being burned, they're being threatened. We've had a couple instances on the East Coast of some Muslims being set on fire. You know, those are real challenges to what are we contributing to in the dialogue when we speak about, quote, the other. When we refer to religious liberty, we mean religious liberty for all. Because if a person doesn't have the freedom to choose what they believe and the freedom to exercise what they believe, not just worship in the house of worship wherever they go, but to be able to exercise it freely.
Okay. And Mark, we got time just for one more caller to mm-hmm. give us their thoughts here. Sorry to cut you off there, but I want to get to Matt in Mason City. Matt, has your faith impacted your decision on who to vote for in this presidential race?
Yes, I am a Catholic, and a lot of times I vote with respect life issues, but I also am informed by Catholic social justice doctrine. So I have issues with both candidates, and at this point, I'm not thinking that I'll probably abstain from voting for the presidential candidates. I don't think you have unqualified versus a person who is not who lacks integrity. And I think that I will probably be in the same thread as Paul Ryan.
Okay, so we're gonna you're not voting at all there is what I'm understanding there for the top of the ticket. I want to give it to Kedron Bardwell real quick. Wrap us up about 15, 20 seconds. What do you make of this conversation, if you can?
Yeah, I've had several students come into my office or talk to me in the same spot. Usually they're typical Republican voters or moderate to conservative voters, and they are just in a bind here because they're not sure who they should vote for. And I just tell them, trust your conscience. And find the candidate closest to you.
And we're going to leave it at that. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. This is River to River on IPR.